Accession number 24192, rail 8.
Mr. Taylor, rail 8. We're talking about your time in the line around about Hill. 217. Between October and November 1951. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Looking at typical day, if there's such a thing. So after stand two,
everybody would be up, standing in the pits. You then make sure they had breakfast, had a meal, had compo rations, which we had.
Can I ask you about the food? This was compo rations. Was that the same as the Second World War?
Yeah.
Can you explain what it was for people?
Everything with the odd exception was in tins. You had Irish stew, sausage and beans, the sweets, chocolate, they're all in all tins, ham, bacon, butter, they're all in tins, all tins.
Were they in boxes for 8 men still? Or?
Yeah. You had your 24-hour ration pack, you had a 24-hour ration. What do you have? Yeah, that's right. And you also had a 24-hour ration pack, which is a small pack, which if you had to go out and lie up somewhere for a day, then you'd take one of these each to use. So you had your small ration pack and you had your 8-day pack. So.
Well, what did you think of the food?
I thought it was very good. I thought it was excellent, that stuff. Providing you cooked it right. I mean, stuff.
How would you cook it? I mean, would you each cook your own? I mean, you wouldn't have.
No, you each cook your own.
And how did you do that?
Mess tin, bit of water, and open the tin, and cook it.
What do you use to heat?
Oh, you had your hexamine burner, hexamine. That's a block of hexamine. You had a small stand, which you and you dropped this, put the hexamine in, set it light, and you stood your mess tin on the top, and you'd cook it like that. Some places, you could build a small fire, and if you found a pot, you've got a pot or a tin, like a biscuit tin or something, put water in and put all the tins in together, and cook for the whole section. Some people did that. Some of the sections, I didn't mind how it was done, as long as everybody cooked.
So you were fine with the food?
I liked it. I mean,
there was enough as well?
Yeah. Yeah.
What about water ration? I mean, or how did you get your water ration?
We got the water up in jerry cans. The CQMS used to deliver it to us.
Did you get enough water?
Yes. I can remember. I can't ever recall.
You weren't thirsty.
I can't ever recall being without water.
Would you drink it as water or would you drink it as tea? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, it's. I think it depends on what you were doing at the time. If you wanted to drink a water, you could have a drink of water and then have a cup of tea later with the meal. But as I said, I can never remember being without.
What did you reckon to army tea? I mean, the people say it's different from normal tea. It's just, well, I think it's just got a lot more sugar in it. But I'm not sure. What did you reckon to army tea?
Well, the army tea that's made in the cookhouse was a bit strong, if you put it that way. But when you cooked your own, because you cooked it to your own likes.
Did you like it strong?
I like a strong cup of tea, actually. Yeah.
Was it highly sweetened? I mean.
No, you had. I think we had milk powder in the tins as well, which made it sweeter, really.
You didn't get U.S. seafood rations.
Yeah, we did.
Is that as well as compo or instead?
That's instead of.
What did you think of
Frankfurter chunks and ham and beans and Frankfurter chunks? What else was it we had? I can't remember, but I remember that was a major one.
How did you rate that compared to the compo?
I don't think it was as good as ours, actually.
Why not?
It seemed too sweet. It seemed like eating a pudding rather than one of our meals. So I didn't rate it very very highly. We did have fresh items towards Christmas, I think, if I remember rightly.
I'll come back to that, because that's into the, that's probably Sammy Shon, it sounds like.
Yeah, Sammy Shon, yeah.
What about, I mean, did you get the cigarette ration? Or was that in the compo?
There were cigarettes in the compo. We used to get a... well, the American rations had cigarettes in.
As well.
But you didn't get them in the British rations. You got a 50 tin of cigarettes issued.
Per man.
Yeah. I can't remember how long it was for, actually.
Did you smoke?
I smoked at that time. I smoked at that time, yeah. And a lot of the guys didn't. So I finished up with a small pack. Yeah, it's strange that but people didn't at that time. I had quite a number of people who didn't smoke. And I finished up with a large pack full of 50 tin of cigarettes. As I said, you had your Camel cigarettes, Marlboro, another one I can't think of now. I don't think it's still in going now. Or Benson's. No, not Benson's.
Were they reasonable fags, you know?
Camel was a bit strong. Marlboro a bit strong, as far as I was concerned. I tend to smoke the British ones, but at that time.
Going through the morning, you know, what about washing and shaving? I mean, did you encourage it? Was it, or did the officer encourage?
Everybody would be washing and shaved. They'd do that before breakfast, before they ate.
Which water would you use? I mean,
sometimes it's funny because if you were, you'd sooner have a cup of tea than a shave sort of thing, but. The 50 cigarette tin would serve about three people, you know, shaving in that water. So that was used one cigarette tin for between three men.
And you'd heat the water.
Heat the water, and so you had hot water in the tin, and off they go. Your turn next.
And you were expected to shave.
Yeah.
It wasn't a matter of choice.
I think it was just something which we knew we had to do. I mean. You just couldn't run around like some of the Americans and the other units that run around with beards and whatever.
Why was it important for you?
Well, I think health-wise and hygiene-wise, you couldn't see whether they had anything wrong with them, and face-wise, and if you let it grow, so make sure they did.
I know some units had problems, but it's inevitable in a way. But were the problems with lice either in this early stage or later? I think if they're later.
I think it was later time when we there. I think the lice came at a later date when we sent our clothing to a Korean laundry, and they used to come back with full of lice. That's what I can recall anyway. As you look down the seams of your underpants and this sort of thing, and take them out.
How did you get them out?
Well, you just had to scrape them out around there. Hopefully that they stayed out, and you got everyone out. But the same with the haircuts. He used to come around occasionally, the old Korean, and cut hair. He had more lice in his hair, and you used to have in your pants when they came out from the laundry. But this sort of thing. I started watching one day, and there was lice in his hair, the old Korean.
You could see them?
Yeah.
What about impetigo? I mean, it seems to have been a problem with some unit. You know, it's...
Yeah, I had ringworm on that wrist. There for some reason, don't know where I got. Must have got out of the ground or in the bunker inland in the bunker or something like that. But I got it treated, and
What were the symptoms? I mean, I know people should know, but
it came up in a red spot, and then you could see it as the ring type. Why I should come there, I don't know. Whether it's where I was had my sort of sleeping in the old bunker, with the hand out or something in the ground, but.
Was it a worm? I mean, what is it? I mean, or is it a skin infection?
It is a skin infection.
Yeah, it's not.
No. It's just.
How did they treat it?
Well, I can remember they had some cream. I think the doctor gave me. That's all I can remember. Yeah.
Were skin problems? You know, I know impetigo was quite rife. I mean, were these skin problems?
I don't think they in Korea. I can't remember. I can't recall too many skin problems. Because the summer was fairly. It was warm, but it wasn't excessively hot.
What about, I know we're not getting far in the day, what about the latrines, another morning thing, possibly, or not? What were your latrines like? In this post there, you know...
They had We had to dig our own and put your thunder box over it, build one.
You'd actually build it, yeah, so you had a bit of privacy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't the open trench in
the pole. No, no, no. On a pole now. No. We did try as much as possible to do that. We lost one in one case with a shell. Hit the bunker, hit the bum. Nobody on it at that time. But no, we always tried to do that, tried to build a reasonable type below. So it, and we had to change it occasionally depending on how long you were there, but fill it in and move it around. But yeah, it, everybody was happy with it. So
now we're talking about the daily routine. I keep taking you off, but I mean, so morning, stand to, hand out the tablets, breakfast. Yeah. What then? For you, that, as a corporal in charge
of it. You then had your grenades. You had your hand grenades there. Rifle, your ammunition. The they all had to be cleaned. Grenades had to be cleaned.
You cleaned the grenades.
Yeah, well, you, in fact, they were. You had to, you emptied them during the day. Took the detonator and everything out of the grenade during the day, and put it back in before last light at night. Well, in case somebody playing around with it on the position. We had one. I had one guy who, I mean, he said, take the base plate off first, take your detonator out, which he didn't. He took the pin out first, and it went straight down, it took out the base plate, it went straight through, it had it standing on an ammunition box, empty ammunition box. I think there were some signal satchels in there, which usually carry the signal equipment around. They went straight through the ammunition box, straight through these signal satchels into the sandbags, and the grenade was still there. In fact, it just knocked the detonator out, and the detonator had done that damage. Took the base plate straight out. But he got, I can't remember what he got now. Oh, he got fined, I think.
He was all right.
Oh, yeah, he was all right, yeah. Because I said, get, run, get out. And they'd gone, so he was all right. Nobody got hurt. I think he got fined, I think. You couldn't very put him anywhere. Or give him anything to do, but he was in the same boat as us anyway, so there's not many. He couldn't go on the defaulters or anything like that.
What about cleaning your personal weapons? So you do this every day?
You do that every day.
Your personal weapon would be Lee Enfield still?
Yeah, yeah.
And you clean it from top to bottom?
Yeah, every day, every day.
Why was that so essential?
Well, it makes sure it's worked out. I mean, something could happen, dampness or this sort of thing, so you've got to keep it, wipe it over and re-oil it, really. There was a lot of dust and stuff around at the time, because you were always in a trench. It was all your sandbags and all that sort of thing, your dust and that work moving around. So unless some people stuck something in the barrel at the top and sort of tied something around the working parts to keep them fairly clean, but they still had to clean them every day.
What about your main weapon, in a sense, your mortar?
The mortar, they had to be cleaned.
Were they cleaned from top to bottom?
Yeah, yeah.
And what about the bombs?
Most of the bombs at that time were in cases. So you come singly in cases, so you kept them in the cases until you required. So they were all right.
But that would be done every day in the morning?
Every day. Every
now,
day.
What else would you be doing?
You had different tasks, like... You could do some training. Doing training like getting orders and that sort of thing, getting to move a mortar around and move all that sort of thing. Different ranges, different types of fire. Make sure they know the orders. And all that sort of,
was there any actual need to fire other than for training? In other words, was there a sort of, were you within range of the enemy at this point? You know, I mean,
not actually their positions. We wouldn't reach their positions with a mortar. But they were there for patrols. They used to patrol fairly close, so that was the reason for this.
Perhaps I'm scared for night you open fire. Yeah. So you sort of train during the day, though. You'd do a bit of practice firing.
Practice firing, that sort of thing.
Would you actually fire, or would you just move?
No, we wouldn't fire. No, we wouldn't fire. No, just sort of dry training. Yeah.
What else would you do? Would you inspect as a corporal? Would you have a role of inspecting your little section?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, just to make sure everybody got what they should do, and check out, make sure everybody's well. Nothing wrong with the body, so the impetigo and that sort of thing you were talking about. But you'd check out the wire that you put out in case that has got damage in any way and that sort of thing. The defence part of it. If necessary, renew any sandbags and renew the positions, or make sure everything is tidy within the positions. The trenches and the mortar pits. All these sort of things, little things you crop up every now and again.
Would your officer come round? You must have had a second lieutenant.
Yeah, we did.
Did you remember his name?
Yeah, Bill Della.
Bill Della?
Della, yeah.
Now, tell us about him. What was he like, and what was his job as far as you saw it as a young corporal?
He was a bit of a bully, actually.
In what way?
Shouting it. I've seen him throw a match at one of the soldiers.
A match?
Matchet. A jetty, or you might ever call it. Army call it a matchet, yeah. Stand on the hill and throw it at him. For some reason, don't know why. Can't remember why.
So he had a temper on him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he did. Yeah, he was his lieutenant.
Not a second lieutenant.
Sorry?
Not second lieutenant.
No, we had a second lieutenant come to us, but I can't recall his name.
Tell us a bit more about Della. How did you get on with him? What was he like as a soldier? As well as a person, a bit of a bully of temper, but what was he like?
I thought he was quite good as a soldier. You always knew where you were, where you stood with him. You didn't step out of line, of course. And everything that he said was as it should be. So he said, do that, and you did it, and you knew you were doing it right.
Would he lose his temper only with a reason, or was he one of these chaps who could lose his temper over next to nothing?
I think he could lose his temper over next to nothing, really, at that time. He may have been under stress, I don't know.
Wait, it's a sign of nerves.
Yeah, could well be.
Did he show any sign of nerves, other than, probably...
Not that I can recall, other than that, he was...
Was he always fair with you?
Yeah.
So you didn't have trouble?
Yeah, I didn't have any trouble with him.
He didn't shout at you, then?
Not that I can recall. He may well have done, but I can't recall anything to that.
And what would he do? Would he come round every day, or was it once a week?
Well, he lived with us.
He was actually on the...
He actually lived with us on the petition. So he had his own reports and that sort of thing, and he was on these old groups and that sort of thing up in Echelon and with the CO and all that sort of thing. And he'd come back with orders, and we'd do a debriefing and an old group and that sort of thing. And I would have to go back and tell the people what was happening and whatever was in that...
What were the old groups like? I mean, who would he call in?
He would call in... You see, the... probably the sergeant, a couple of the sergeants would be up with the companies on the OPs, the observation post within the company.
That's what the sergeants did with it.
Sergeants would do. So you probably had one sergeant on the ground, and the sections were run by the corporals. The old group, he'd come back and he'd say, what is...
Probably so he'd go to the colonel's
group. He'd go to the colonel's
group. And then he'd come back with
his own group, yeah. Yeah, and then the corporals and the platoon sergeant who was on the ground with us would go to his old group, and he would then go through what the colonel had told him, what was happening at the time, where the other units were, and this sort of thing, if there's any movement within the units, and whether what we've got to do, whether anything special that we've got to take on, and this sort of thing. And then we would then depart and go back and tell the guys, so everybody knew what was happening.
So that worked pretty well.
Yeah.
Now, what about the sergeants? Do you remember any of them in particular? Or
I remember Wilding.
Sergeant Wilding.
Wilding. He was an ex. He was a wartime man. He was Kohima. He was a very, very nervous man.
How did it show itself?
On November the 5th or 6th, 5th I think it was, when we were heavily shelled, when the KOSB's got knocked off their hill. He was in a bunker. You couldn't get him out. He was really. You had to get things moving, but he was really bad.
Do you know his first name? Or?
Jim. Jimmy's name. Jim Warren.
Do you think it was? Do you think he behaved like that at Kahima? Or do you see?
No,
what I mean?
I think it was. I think it was probably because of Kahima. A lot to do with it, I think. At the time, you know, he was a nice. He was a lovely fella. He was a nice guy. Really nice guy, but he was a bit.
What did men think when he when you know? I mean,
well,
did
I tried to keep
him
away from them. I don't think they knew actually.
So only you.
I knew.
Did you think less of him, or did you understand?
No, I didn't. I knew he told me about the Kohima and this sort of thing, and the problems they had there, and I didn't think any less of him. No. I think it's the way he felt at the time, and there's nothing I could do about it, except try and sort of get him out of it.
You certainly didn't report him.
Well, I didn't feel at the time that there was any reason to report him because of the things were happening and everything was going as it should be.
Any of the other sergeants you recall?
Well, Dutch Holland I was talking about.
He was a sergeant.
He was a sergeant. He was up in the with I can't remember which company he was with. I think he was with D Company as an EOP up there. And who was the other one? There's another one.
It might come back to you later.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so the sergeants weren't particularly... I mean, was Sergeant Wilding the one who was normally on your position with
yeah,
you?
Yeah.
Now, what was his job? I mean, would he...
He was responsible for the whole setup. So if he would do the inspection as well
of the units.
With the left.
And... So, going through the day still, but it sounds like, I mean, did you have to keep your head down? Was there a risk of sniping, or was there occasional shells?
No.
Or was
there... The shells there were, but no sniping. No.
What about the shells? First time under fire, I'm not talking about the 5th, or whatever it was, the big bombardment. How did you react to your first shelling? Was it Korean or Chinese as well?
Yeah, there was a bit of both, actually, wasn't it? I think my first one was October. I think everybody in the battalion was the first. November the 5th was the big one.
Well, tell us about that. Let's go talk about that. What happened?
We were. It was a Sunday, I think, if I remember rightly. I think it was 4th, 5th actually. So it was the 4th on the Sunday, and I think the 5th is on the Monday. So it was sort of over that period from Sunday afternoon through Sunday night into Monday morning. I think somebody said there were 3,000 shells we got.
Is that at your position or is that
all the way along the line?
What was that like, the first time under fire?
It was a bit scary. I had a gang working on the wiring, checking on the wiring and the Sunday afternoon when the first one came over. First one landed about 50 yards away, and we were behind it, so that most of the shot goes forward anyway from his cell. Then it continued. We were quite lucky because being into the base of the hill, because they couldn't touch you with a shell. If they had a mortar, which would reach us, then we'd probably be in danger. But they were sort of landing just behind us, behind our position, most of the time. Then when it got dark, towards the evening, when they started to hit the KSB on the hill, and they were running out of ammunition, and then they came round to us, and I helped load up a lot of our ammunition for them to use, and I had two guys wounded with shrapnel that night. I can't recall the guys' names actually, but they went and never saw them anymore. They left to get back to the medical centre.
And this was on Hill.
This was 217, I think. Yeah.
217.
Yeah. And the KOSB came off that night. They all pulled back through us, and we had to move back. Then everybody had to pull back. Then about I suppose we must have moved back about half a mile into new positions. So we had to fill a hole with the carrier's bead gone off. We had to fill this, sort of fill this gap, pull back in and fill the gap up where the carrier's bead had left.
And that was on the night of the
and that was on the, that, that was on the 5th, that was, yeah.
Was the retreat on the? Were you threatened during the retreat? I mean, were the Chinese or Koreans coming after you, or were they, was it unopposed retreat?
It was unopposed. I think the withdrawal as such.
Of course,
the withdrawal from the carrier's bay through us was pretty hectic. Actually, they were coming in from all directions. Now they weren't coming in as sections and platoons, they were coming individuals and going through just to get off the hill. I think that was the night that Speakman got his VC. Same incident. And anyway, they went through us, and at first light, they said that we'd got to move and we all had to pull back. So we had to move back a section at a time and into a new position. So it meant we had to dig new pits.
So you actually went back on the 6th?
I can't.
Well, you're not quite sure.
I can't remember if the 5th or the 6th. I think first light of the 5th, we were told about it. So maybe on that day we moved back, and by the night of the 6th, we were in position. I think that's the way it worked. And then, of course, after that, we were in.
No, that wasn't to the Samichon Valley, was it?
No. They're still in the same location.
Same basic place.
Yeah. Except we just pulled back and made another set of new positions. And that was the time that the Leicesters were in reserve, and they then brought them out of reserve to attack the hill that the KSB just lost. And so they passed through us. That was the reason we pulled back, to fill this hole, to allow them to come through to attack the hill that they'd lost.
Did you provide any supporting fire for the Leicesters?
Yeah. We did. A lot of smoke. A lot of HE, some phosphorus. We didn't have too much phosphorus because they said it was too expensive. But, all three. I can't remember how many, but we certainly fired quite a lot.
And that'd be on the 6th?
That'd be on the 6th, yeah.
Roughly?
Roughly the 6th.
Was the attack a success? And what could you see and what was happening?
You could see everything that's happening virtually.
What did you see?
You could see people falling down when they were shot. Mortars firing from over the hill as they were going up the hill. I thought it was completely wrong what they were doing, actually.
Why?
Because the way they were doing it, because it seemed to be everybody going together rather than going up and being covered by different units of the battalion. And it wasn't. I think they lost quite a few men, actually, if I remember rightly.
Did they take it?
They had a lot of wounded. That I can't recall. I think they did, actually. I think they did.
Did you move back then?
We stayed in the same location. I can't remember how long before we went back into reserve.